You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You're listening to Giants Croncast, a podcast chronicling the San Francisco Giants. Featuring Brian Murphy and Doug Brazzoni. Part of FFSN, Fans First Sports Network.
Well, we're 21 games into the season, and I don't know. I guess if we were younger, Doug, we might be like, so that happened. That's weird.
I can't even.
What does that even mean? Really? Seriously?
Just looking at the pitching staff. What are those?
We're looking at Brandon Crawford's line. Oh, I just threw up in my mouth. Oh. We are recording this as the Giants are still playing their game against the Mets. So we are kind of doing a choose your own adventure intro. But we could start there. You know, I wrote earlier in the week that, well, actually, it was just a tweet, but I tweeted, you know, if the Giants come out of this series 8-13, that's not so bad. That's not so bad. And you kind of wrote to that effect.
Yeah, I mean, because a lot of people don't remember this after everything else that happened last year. But last year, the Giants started out 14-7. And then they fell apart. But what that means is that even if you start 7-14, you can still kind of have a resurgence. You know, the season story isn't completely written in April. So yes, they've looked bad over the first few weeks. They have had their issues, but I would say, you know, there's still kind of hope for the team. There's still a lot of reasons that what went wrong early won't continue to go wrong. And you don't have to give up on the Giants just yet. I know it's tempting. I've said to myself, I should just give up on the Giants and find another hobby, but I haven't done it. Is that because I'm stupid? Maybe. That could be because I'm stupid. That's probably why. But you don't have to.
So the Giants went 3-4 this week. And before we get into all that, there is one thing I want to talk about first. Earlier this week, I got a direct message on Twitter from Andrew Bader, who is a longtime listener of the podcast, all iterations, and has sent us in questions and has been a big supporter, and really appreciate his help over the years boosting the signal. But he's now trying to get us to boost a much more important signal. And that is one of his students. He's a teacher they lost everything in an apartment fire about 8-9 days ago now. And they even lost the family dog. His apartment fire building displaced 14 residents. So his students' whole family, all their possessions, the family dog. It's a tragedy. It's one of the worst things. Every family I've met who lost something in a fire or just, you know, lost a house or whatever, it changes, you know, it changes you quite a lot. And in this case, this family needs some financial assistance. I can't imagine the lurch that they're in right now. They've set up a GoFundMe. The direct link is www.gofundme.com/f/my-family-start-over. My family start over. It's a $25,000 goal, like I said, and they've raised $17,300 of it so far. This is a Bay Area family. This is a San Francisco family. It's in San Francisco. So if you're a Giants fan, and if you're sympathetic to elementary school students, if you're sympathetic to families who have lost their pet, take a look at it. If you can't give right now, which is understandable, maybe you could help spread the word, post it on your Facebook, retweet it. The Giants Croncast Twitter account recently retweeted it. You can find it anywhere, hopefully on social media to spread the word. And I'd really appreciate it personally. So if you do nothing else for us, retweet this GoFundMe.
That's right. If you like when we have mailbag episodes, but you don't like sending questions, which I know is statistically most of you, Andrew is one of the two people who reliably sends questions every time.
That's right.
So,
all right. So, Doug, this time to make our rundown simpler, because it's kind of amorphous, I always ask Doug, audience, I always say, like, just in this segment, say something you like about the Giants and something you didn't like about the Giants week, which can be really reductive and kind of silly. I don't know if this is a better tweak. You tell me. I think this segment should be called Interesting and Concerning. So we should say things that we saw this past week that were interesting about the Giants, interesting to us, and things that were concerning to you about the Giants. Is that better or worse?
We'll try it and find out.
Okay. All right. That seems, knowing you as well as I do, and that's basically never seeing your face, that sounds like a tepid reaction. But yeah, let's give it a shot. See what happens. So Doug, what's something that interested you about the Giants this week?
Taylor Rogers stopped being bad.
That almost was like he reads your blog.
Yeah. He read my blog. He read my newsletter. He's a very dedicated subscriber. And he was like, oh, I've been bad this year. Like it just didn't sink in. And so he stopped doing that for the week, which was great. Obviously we're recording this, as we've said, during the game on Sunday. So I can't say right now whether he had a bad game on Sunday. But for the rest of the week, he didn't walk a hitter. He didn't allow a home run. He was in multiple games without allowing a run. So that's what you want out of any reliever, and especially one that you have signed to a 3-year contract. So that is promising, because one of the big, big flaws the Giants have seen in the early going has been the bullpen's inability to have anyone consistent past Scott Alexander and Tyler Rogers. So if Taylor Rogers can get it going, if Camilo Duvall can sort of keep it going, he's looked a little better too, then that'll be a big step for the Giants' ability to actually hold leads late in games.
You know what happened with the subscription, right? They both, the Rogers twins, gifted GiantsDoug.substack.com subscriptions to each other.
Yeah.
So they're both readers.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
They're both readers.
I mean, what you just said should be one of my interesting things, but it's not. But we should just talk about here. You mentioned Scott Alexander and Tyler Rogers. I kind of feel like I wish I could buy them a drink.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be that Scott Alexander is like, you know, when he's healthy, he's one of the most dominant relievers, you know, not closers, but like middle relievers in baseball. And then bam, he's staying healthy and being dominant. That's amazing. And then Tyler Rogers, I just love that Tyler Rogers keeps shoving socks down my throat. Just he's like, you didn't think I was good, huh? Well, how about this? But my interesting, one of my interesting things, here's the format, Doug. If you didn't read the full notes, we're going to go back and forth. So my next thing is Logan Webb. He was one of the guys I was going to keep my eye on this week to see how he did. He still has a home run problem, but he looked great. He pitched into the seventh inning. He pitched seven full innings on a Saturday start against the Mets on national TV. He pitched into the seventh against the Marlins. The home run he gave up to Brandon Nimmo on Saturday was such bullshit. It pissed me off so much that I'm like, okay, the ball's juiced. So the ball is just juiced. Yep. But in basically 14 innings, almost 14 innings, he had 14 strikeouts, one walk. I think that's something to keep in mind. When you're wondering how a pitcher's doing, look to the walks, my friend. Look. And if you see enormous numbers of walks, then a bad pitcher you have. So he's not walking, guys. He has 36 strikeouts to four walks on the year. Doing some math. What is that? 9-1 strikeout to walk ratio. That's pretty good. That's outstanding. So he looked great. So that was one of my most interesting things this week. Any more for you, Doug?
JD Davis's defense. When the Giants got JD Davis from the Mets, you know, he was supposed to be a good hitter, no platoon splits, and just a butcher in the field, kind of unplayable almost in the field. And you go, okay, you know, you hear that, you're like, well, he's not worse than Darren Ruff. That's probably an upgrade. I don't know why the Mets did it. It has not gone well for them. Giants also got prospects. And you kind of just make your peace with, well, another guy's not very good on the field. And this year, he's been spectacular at third base. He's been, in the early going, first 3 weeks, like Gold Glove caliber third base. Has he ever been good at third base in his life? I don't know. Maybe in high school.
I would say in high school, he would have had to have been, right? They wouldn't have played.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have played there.
Right.
Yeah.
But as a professional, every position he's been at, the scouting report has been universally been, he's a disaster. He gets to the Giants. I don't remember how he looked last year at third. I remember him being better than I expected, but that doesn't necessarily mean good. Mm-hmm. Like he knew what a baseball was if it was hit at him. So that was, you know, I was led to believe he would not. And this year he's been great. I don't know what the Giants did. I don't know how they've been, if it was, you know, Kai Correa. I know it used to be Ron Wotus who's in charge of infield defense. Now maybe Kai Correa. But they've done an amazing job turning him into a plus defender.
My last one was Tyro Estrada. Now, Tyro Estrada offensively has not really had a fantastic week, except for Sunday's game where he hit a home run. But he had six hits seven hits at least. Not great. His win probability average was below, you know, it was negative. I don't know what the home run gave him. But he is one of the Giants' most valuable hitters in the early part of the season. He's got energy, you know. He's looked good. Anything else interesting?
No.
Okay. I had one more interesting thing. It's speaking to what we've already been talking about. The Giants look like they should be slightly better than their record, which I know is damning with faint praise, but they really should be just a little bit better. I mean, before, and I'm going to get into this in the next bit, but before fans start, you know, sitting back and throwing peanut shells at me and burping, whatever, you look up and down. It's basically a league average pitching staff and a very close to a league average offense. And then I do a weekly Statcast thing every week. And I get it. People don't want to look at the analytics. They don't want to hear anything about based on, you know, everything I learned about baseball, I learned by the time I was 20, and I'm not going to learn anything new. I understand that. It's human nature. But it's also like everyone else looks to these things. And if you want to look at, I don't want to look at batting average to tell me if a player is good or not. I want to know if a player is going to be good. That is what I watch baseball for, is like, is this guy having a bad week, a bad day or whatever? And if I look at the advanced statistics, it actually brings me some comfort to know that, oh no, this guy hits the ball hard. So just looking at the underlying numbers, I guess you could say, the Giants have looked fine. And to that point, Elliot Ramos, who was optioned yesterday, that is not a punishment option. I mean, they obviously needed the space for Jock Peterson, a much better hitter, to be clear. I'm not making an argument that Elliot Ramos is a good hitter, but he had such an interesting call up in his 9 games. Doug, he's hitting the ball harder and in the air and playing solid defense. I mean, I look at that and I go, huh, maybe he's slowly getting better.
Yeah. I mean, you really can't complain about the process. You know, I mean, obviously you want the results to be a little better than Ramos showed, but he was doing the things that you want him to do to have success. And so you have to kind of be excited to see him again when he comes back up, whenever that is.
And you have to hope he carries it on. Okay, let's move on to some concerning things that we saw. And that this list could be long, but Doug, what's one thing that concerned you about the Giants this past week?
It's really hard to not say Michael Conforto dropping a fly ball. So as we're recording this, Michael Conforto just dropped the fly ball in the top of the fourth in Sunday's game. That allowed a run. A run would have come in anyway, but the Giants would have gotten an out, and it would be 2 outs and probably first and second instead of bases loaded, 1 out. So that was distracting.
I think the most concerning thing, I mean, we could go up and down the list, I guess, and pick out one thing, you know, but I'll start with this. I'm concerned about Brandon Crawford. It's more he has little pockets of looking fine and then pockets of looking bad. And it seems now we're maybe after the first couple weeks, he's kind of gotten it back up to 50-50. Or the first week or so, it's back up to 50-50, good and bad, but it's still pretty concerning. I mean, he's the 36-year-old shortstop. The fact that he's showing any glimpses of being solid is maybe surprising, but the Giants need him to be more than 50% of the time serviceable player. So that was concerning.
So I would say David Villar's week was concerning. David Villar, you know, with the emergence of J.D. Davis being a plus defender, that sort of takes the pressure off VR a little bit, but the Giants still need some production out of their farm system. And VR had a good first week or so in this year. And since then it's been pretty rough for him. He had a bad week over the last week.
Two hits in 20 plate appearances, on top of 9 strikeouts. So yeah.
Yeah. 45% strikeout rate.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and it's not like you're watching and be like, oh, he's just some hard hit outs. It's not hard hit outs. He doesn't look good.
No.
So it can happen that sometimes guys, you know, go through something and rebound. I don't want to say it's not going to happen, but VR kind of had a lot of promise in the early going, and it's been tough to watch him this week.
I mean, this sort of happened to him last year. He could be sent down, make some adjustments, come back and be okay. That's a very big possibility. He does have an option. And I think this episode's coming out the morning of when we're going to find out. It could happen after the game on Sunday night. I don't know. Where, you know, the Giants need 2 spots and to get Mitch Haniger and Austin Slater back on the roster. So we might see some moves there. That's a good one. I mean, I'm a huge David Villar guy, or I was very much excited about what he could do this season. But I think the week was rough enough where it's like, might need some more work. The other one for me is probably more of a scolding thing, and I hate that I'm doing it along the lines of Mitch Haniger and Austin Slater. The reaction to either of those guys, it's just online chatter. If those guys are the guys the Giants are counting on to be good this year, then they're in deep trouble already. Those guys are bums. And I don't know. I think I tried to make them as stupid as the comment is, and I hope I nailed it. I don't know. But listen, Mitch Haniger is an injury-prone guy who's not going to probably not amount to what the Giants are paying him over the next 3 years. But they got him because when he does play, he would probably theoretically be one of the top 50 hitters in the league. He has the power, you know, he has the dynamism. He doesn't have a reverse. He doesn't have a platoon split. He's in the JD Davis zone. He's not a great defender, but he's kind of maybe serviceable, especially at Oracle, maybe in left field. I'm not sure what they're planning to do with him there, but they can also DH him. And then you've got Austin Slater, who has been one of the better hitters against left-handed pitching since 2020, since 2019, really. But it's not on the Giants good against left-handed pitching. I'm talking about in baseball, you know, and he is they're not using him to be a star player. This is not running Gorky's Hernandez out there every day to fill a lineup spot because they've got nobody else. As a platoon guy on the other half of Mike Yastrzemski, Austin Slater, very useful. Mitch Haniger, I get it. I understand. The Giants like him, though. They signed him to be the complementing piece to Aaron Judge or Carlos Correa, which, again, you can laugh at, but evaluation-wise, he's supposed to be a middle-of-the-lineup guy. So what was concerning to me is, okay, the Giants are getting back to their full lineup, and you can and people are saying, like, that's a joke of a full lineup. And I'm like, but it's the one they have. Like, you can criticize the team all you want, but it's like they're not playing with their full roster. So are we really getting a fair, like, it's both early in the season and they don't have all their guys. So is this a fair look at what the team is or could be? And I'd say no, logically no. And it's just very frustrating to go, Farinzadi's been running the team since the end of 2018, since 2019. You saw what he could do if all the pieces are working and healthy and all that stuff. And even last year, I don't know if you agree with me, Doug, even last year, that team was garbage. And schematic-wise, whatever their math modeling is, that's still, the fact that they were able to pull 81 wins out of that shows that their process has some positive effect. So why not see what it looks like when they've got all the pieces in there? That was concerning to me. that people are that dumb still.
I want to say your impression of the dumb online guy also sounds like an impression of Brian Sabian.
that was unintentional.
So I love that. But also, yeah, I mean, the team... So this team was built to have Haniger and Slater against the lefties, or else they were going to have a hole there. They knew that. Those were the guys they were counting on. They've been out. And so to say, oh, obviously this team sucks because they can't hit lefties. Yeah, because two of their best guys against lefties are out. Like, they were counting on them. And, you know, Yastrzemski's not going to do what Slater will do against left-handers. It just kind of is what it is. So, I mean, can you criticize the Giants for relying on guys to be healthy? I mean, I guess. I don't know. Like, it seems like most teams would need guys to stay healthy, but if that's the criticism, fine, I guess.
They don't have the depth. Okay, this is my response to the depth question. Well, first of all, you're right. But also, what would an acceptable player look like to cause that criticism not to appear? A guy like Austin Slater or Marco Luciano stepping forward and being a four-win player? And I guarantee you the Giants would love to have either of those guys. Either of those situations, and they don't. But that's what you're saying. It's like, why would they need an Austin Slater? It's like, well, they either need an Austin Slater type from their minors or just an all-star, which is Mitch Haniger. And that's so, you know what I mean? Like, it's just frustrating. We've been through this. The Giants can't develop players, so they have to go buy a guy like Mitch Haniger. And it's a good thing that Bobby Evans did not trade off Austin Slater because Farinzadi has a guy like him to come in and complement and fill out the other half of the platoon. So I have one more concerning thing. Did you have another concerning thing?
Yeah, so my last concerning thing was Sean Manaea has fallen apart in each of his last two starts. And that's not ideal. You know, he's gotten into a little bit of trouble and just not been able to get out of it. And he looked good his first couple. Well, his first start, he looked good. You know, his first appearances against the White Sox, that like 2-inning relief piggybacking thing. But like, he looked really good against the Royals. He looked good in the early going in Detroit. And then he ran into a hiccup and you kind of excuse that, you go, well, okay, sometimes it happens. And then something similar happened against the Mets. And he's one of the guys, not to pile on Larry Bear, but he's one of the guys who Larry Bear was like, well, sure, we didn't get Correa, but when you see how it all comes together with the guys we did get, and you're like, yeah, but it needs to come together a little better. with Sean Manaea. So that was a little concerning. Like, his velocity was up. His stuff looked good at the beginning, and then it kind of fell apart. And the team needs him to be a starter right now. So it's not been fun to watch.
My last concerning thing is the attendance. I know that seems silly, but they had the Mets in town for four games, and they didn't have any sellouts. One of the games was a nationally televised Saturday afternoon game with the ace pitcher on the mound, and they drew under 30,000. So I'm sure we'll be talking about that a little bit more in this next bit, the A's. So we're talking about the A's because in the dead of night, the A's tried to escape to Las Vegas by making this big announcement that they've secured a binding agreement to buy land for a future stadium in Las Vegas. I mean, let's talk about the shitty hand the A's fans have been dealt. But I want to tack it on to my last concerning thought here. The Giants are definitely happy about this, the Giants organization, because now they're the only game in town. And I think it's kind of that Spock saying, you may find that having is not so pleasing a thing as wanting. It is not logical, but it is often true. And the Giants have so badly wanted to be the only game in town, and they can't even sell out their own stadium when they're ostensibly better than the A's. And so, I don't know. This seems like an all-time bag fumble coming up here. But let's talk about the one that's actually happening. The A's trying to basically hold a gun to Las Vegas to get this deal through.
Yeah, it sucks. It's clear that ever since the current ownership group of the A's has been in place, they have viewed the team as nothing more than a way to leverage real estate. That's the entire purpose. That's the only thing they want. They don't give one single solitary shit about baseball. But Lou Wolf wanted a stadium in Fremont so he could own the land. It didn't work out. And now John Fisher wants a stadium in Las Vegas so he can own the land. It's awful. It's why you look at baseball, you go, well, we're going to get these business people out of here. Because business people don't care about the product on the field. They care about money. And it's one of those, it's kind of a sign of the decline of American society, I will say, that you have a thing that's good that people like, and then some rich guy comes in and is like, I'm going to blow this up because I can make 3% more by blowing it up.
I like that. I agree. I think the decline of our culture is on the global scale. I might have ranted about this before, but real estate is the outside of the purview of, is it fiat currency? Whatever it is, you know, currency that countries have that, you know, that's gobbled up by countries. Countries own currency. So money is owned by sovereign nations. But real estate is another way to move money around and build value. That is its own form of currency. And that is what globally, if you're trying to be wealthy on a global market, owning real estate is a way of owning currency now. So I agree. It'd be kind of like getting the lawyers out of government is getting real estate people out of baseball, of owning baseball teams, because they immediately just squat with their own area of expertise, which tends to ruin it for the rest of us in a way that doesn't move things back and forth. Yeah. And, you know, in this case, it's not even a done deal. It was announced as a done deal. And I think it's pretty funny now that we're like, oh, well, we got to see, because not even the Nevada state government's like, wait, what? We got to cough up some money for this. It's like, yeah, that's how sports deals work.
Yeah, guys, you got to find $500 million. Start searching those couch cushions.
And so I'm saying all this because I have to be completely, totally, nakedly honest. This is not a Grant Brisby admission where I started off as being an A's fan. My first baseball game was a Giants game at Candlestick Park. That's not the issue. But every other person I grew up with, literally an A's fan. And all the people who taught me about baseball outside of my dad died when I was young. Like, after that, all A's fans. So the passion and energy that I've had from baseball is because of A's fans growing up. And the A's growing up were always better than the Giants. You know what I mean? It's like when the Giants got into the World Series, it's like, well, this won't take long. And it sure didn't, except for that earthquake. And for me, that's why it's always annoying when A's fans have this weird chip on their shoulder. It's like, I got shoved in a locker for several decades watching, you know, by A's fans about the Giants. So the turnabout being fair play is one thing. But in this case, diehard fans, passionate fans, knowledgeable fans, working backwards for me, it was always A's fans growing up. And just even my friends who are not in the sports, they were, you know, the A's have a goofy energy about them. So for me, this is heartbreaking. It's infuriating and it's heartbreaking. Not because I want to root for the A's in Oakland, but because I know how much it means to a lot of people. And the Bay Area is a better market with two teams in it anyway.
The Bay Area can sustain two teams. And they just, at some point, looked at a spreadsheet and were like, okay, but what if? And honestly, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, the Bay Area is like the richest part of the country, and Las Vegas is not. So it's just the land deal. And it's sad.
And again, you can see how much that just owning property matters. That John Fisher it's like, as long as I own land, it doesn't matter if it's undeveloped desert or in the Bay Area, right? It's like, because I'll own it, and that's what matters. And then also just the other part of it, of just like, Larry Bear sucks so much. It's just, so giving him any sort of leverage point or marketing opportunity, it's just like, the Giants don't deserve this. They don't. I mean, to their absolute credit, they were able to make the most out of keeping the Giants in San Francisco. And that's great. By the way, helped in part by the A's, right?
To be fair, that wasn't out of the goodness of the A's heart. They thought they could tap into the Giants market in like Marin and San Francisco if the Giants were in San Jose. The A's were just too stupid to put like a contingency in the territorial rights thing. That's it.
Right. So we all agree sports owners are stupid and we should be rooting for their failure, which means John Fisher has to fail in this move. And then the A's maybe can find some solace. I mean,
and then maybe he'll be forced to sell the A's to Joe Lacob, who will keep them in Oakland.
Yeah. Also, if the A's move, I can't imagine that the market's going to stay a one team market forever. Just seems unlikely
for the reasons you said. It would be the natural place to put because baseball wants to expand to 32 teams. It would be natural to have a team in Oakland. They just have to figure out the stadium. And if you get a rich guy who at least marginally cares about the baseball part of it, then he could do it pretty easily, I think.
All right, let's talk about Madison Bumgarner being designated for assignment by the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Brian, I don't want him back.
I wrote about this yesterday on McCovey Chronicles, and obviously it's a ridiculous move. The only reason I wrote about it is because people in Bay Area media thought it worth asking current Giants on the roster, Doug, while they were preparing for a game that night, if they thought that Madison Bumgarner coming back would be like a good idea. I couldn't believe they asked any of the players and coaches.
What did they say?
We like the guys we have now. We're pretty full up on the pitching side of things. You know, we like our group now. He's done a lot for the organization, you know, all that. He's only 33 years old. That's something that the article pointed out, but it's absurd. And Wendy had mentioned last week, Giants, she had mentioned, and he had written an article for SF Gate about, fuck it. Who cares about this season? Bring Bumgarner back. And I feel like people just have to hold the line on their emotions here. What are we talking about? This guy's glory days are well in the past. One of the comments on the article that I had was like, well, we shouldn't tear him down. We should just honor what he did as a Giant. To which I can now say that there was a time for that, but we are beyond that time. And the second point is, Doug, am I completely out of pocket here? Madison Bumgarner is an asshole.
He is. I mean, there will also be another time for that later after he officially retires and the Giants bring him back for like the Wall of Fame ceremony and stuff. Like, then you can honor what he did for the
team. Or next year's 2014 reunion.
You can honor what he did for the team then. So
Yeah, I did like the idea he could come back as a DH.
Right. I mean, hey, they do need someone who can hit lefties.
That's right.
He hits right-handed. So.
Okay, that we don't need to say anything else about that, right?
We don't.
Yeah. So for this last bit, you know, given where the Giants are at, it is April. You know, seasons can't be won in April. They certainly can be. Teams can be put well behind the eight ball, though, in April. And the Giants have 6 games this week, 4 against the Cardinals, and then 2 in Mexico City against the Padres. First time they're facing the Padres this season. That's 6 games. I mean, a 4-2 seems like what they kind of need to do to stay, you know, they could maybe be 12-15 at the end of the week. I don't know, but your article is like very sober, and it's, I read through it a couple of times and be like, is there a joke in here? Or are you just like, nah, I'm just kidding. But no, you were very serious and very sober of like, you know, this is not the end of the season. It's potentially one really bad month out of 6. But I mean, they really do have to get going in a hurry here.
I mean, they do. Like, you can make excuses for them a little bit if they go 3-3 this week. You know, the Cardinals are good. The Padres are incredibly talented. I don't think either of them has really hit their stride yet. But, you know, those are both teams that have a lot of really good players on them. So if the Giants can sort of hold the line and then start getting on a roll against teams that are a little worse, then I think that wouldn't be the end of the world. You kind of want to see them go 4-2 and start to turn it around. You know, Jock Peterson is back. They're expecting Slater and Haniger back soon. So you want to see the offense do more than it has been doing. But I think 4-2 against what should be 2 of the better teams in the NL is going to be a tall order for a team that's, you know, they're not completely out of the woods yet. They're playing better right now. They're at least being competitive in more games than they used to be. But I wouldn't say I trust them to be at their full potential just yet. If they go 3-3, I'll feel fine about it. I would feel much better if they had a winning week, obviously. But, you know, and especially with the X factor of playing in Mexico City, which is a higher elevation than Coors Field, that has the potential to just be a crazy 2-game series.
Okay, so working backwards from that, this has been the beating drum I've had all this week. I get it. You look at the pitching and you go, oh, the pitching is terrible, it needs to get better. But Doug, I'm of the belief that no, the lineup needs to get better. They need to start hitting closer to their potential, to their expectations. They're hitting the ball pretty hard for the most part. But yeah, that Mexico City series, that those should be 14-12 games, or, you know, 9-7 games. And I'm fine with that. But I really think the Giants can get it going and rolling. One thing about the Cardinals, they are a good team on paper, but so far it hasn't come to fruition. They're 9-13, and they're on the road, they're 4-5. So, you know what I mean? Like, theoretically, 3-1 is not impossible, especially if things keep going. But to your point, yeah, Haniger and Slater, I think Slater is probably slightly ahead of Haniger in terms of the prep time. He's had a few more rehab games, I believe. So, and also he would be used in more of the platoon role anyway. I think once Haniger comes in, they're just going to drop him in and try to play him, you know, 2 out of 3 days to start, and then they'll start playing every day. But I think that they just got to start hitting the ball more consistently, cut down on the strikeouts somehow. When they're making contact, they're doing damage. So that's what I really hope to see happen this week, is the lineup that's going.
Yeah, even, I mean, more. Both sides have been kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
Hashtag both sides. yeah, I mean, I think the lineup is the one you kind of expect to turn around faster.
Yes, because that's, you know what? That's my bigger point. Yes.
Yeah.
Because I think the juiced ball and the defense, all that, like, you've got to work out on that. It might take a couple of months for everyone to settle in and figure out what the new normal is. But hitting the baseball is hitting the baseball, you know. So,
exactly.
Anything you want to preview on your Substack this week?
I have no idea what I'm going to write about this week.
Fantastic.
Yep. It's going to be topical, probably.
Well, I'll definitely be doing the series previews, and I'll be looking at the Statcast from the past week to see if there's any gems in there. I already mentioned Elliot Ramos, but the reason why I kept him in mind this past week is because he had an interesting week when he came up his first week. So it's just stuff like that I tend to look at and I go, oh, this guy in all the games this week, he popped up. He had a lot of hard hit balls, that kind of thing. But one more time before we sign off, definitely go check out the GoFundMe that Drew had, Andrew Bader had sent us. It's Lucille Wiley. She's the organizer for the fundraiser. GoFundMe.com/F, as in free, /my-family-start-over. And again, the goal is 25,000 and they're up to about 17,300. If you can donate anything, that'd be great. And if not, try to spread the word if you are able. So thanks again for listening. We'll be back next week with an all new episode. Until then,
go Giants!